This is a replay of Tuesday night, January 31st on WGN Radio. We started at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. You got 3 hours to spend together. I hope you'll join me. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. We had fun playing trivia last night, but I do admit I got several emails saying, aren't you going to talk about Barrett Strong? Well, of course I'm going to talk about Barrett Strong, but I didn't want to do that on trivia. I actually had thought about, in fact, it was Carol, who does all my wonderful show prep, who said, well, for your theme, why don't you do songs written by Barrett Strong? Well, the problem is they were all hits, just about. It would have been hard to stump you, and all by big people. But did he write Money? Oh, man, this is a question that went on to his grave, actually. Money undeniably provided the money for Motown to exist. It's as simple as that. When Berry Gordy was starting the label, he didn't have the money, and this is before they, you know, imprinted a label as Motown. But with Tamla, they didn't really have the money to go on, and it was actually from the sales of Money, Barrett Strong song, that they were able to build an entire label. And of course it was also released on Anna, which was a subsidiary label, but ultimately it was the first release for Barrett Strong on Tamla. But did he write it? And see, this is what's interesting, because if you look at the early records, if you have an early copy of it, either on Anna or if you've got one on Tamla, you'll see that there are three writers credited: Berry Gordy and Janie Bradford and Barrett Strong. But about 3 years into it, Barrett Strong's name disappears from the list. And when Berry Gordy was asked about it, he said, well, he never wrote it. That was just an administrative mix-up. And then as things went on many years later and things were consolidated and amalgamated and everything else that happens, and the copyright laws changed, next thing you know, when it's renewed, here's Barrett Strong's name on it again. And it took about a picosecond for Berry Gordy to get that removed. But did he write it? He contends that absolutely he co-wrote it, but as far as Berry Gordy was concerned, no, he didn't. So he went to his grave with that being not decided. Well, I guess Berry Gordy thinks it is decided, but nonetheless, Barrett was born in 1941 in West Point, Mississippi. And he was among the first to be signed to Tamla. And of course, Money was the first hit. Got to number two on the R&B charts in 1960. As I say, it was first coming out on Tamla, Motown's first label, but then leased to Anna as it was getting airplay. And it was actually on Anna when it was a hit. And I don't know the particulars on precisely what happened, but I do know there were money issues. And I do know that it was solved from the Money for Money. That's exactly how that happened, and why the need to remove Barrett from the original copyright registration. Well, I guess that's one that Barry will take to his grave. But by the mid-1960s, Strong had become a Motown lyricist and writer, and mostly teamed with Norman Whitfield, actually, and they wrote some of the biggest Motown sellers. I Heard It Through the Grapevine, of course, but War, Edwin Starr, and Smiling Faces Sometimes, Undisputed Truth. And then you get into the psychedelic soul, which, you know, we could argue all night if that was good or wasn't good, but what I'll go on the side of wasn't. But what's interesting about that, of course, is these records sold like mad. And it was interesting that Barrett Strong was asked about that period of time. And he said, well, as far as Cloud Nine or Psychedelic Shack or Ball of Confusion, that was all just a sign of the time. Seems those like were the only things that were righteous enough to write about in those years. And there's Papa Was a Rolling Stone. That's things that happen in a lot of people's lives. Living in the ghetto, they had a father that sort of just hung out. He's home every now and then or whatever. And we could see those things happening and we could write about them. And people would say to us, wow, that happened in my life. So other than the psychedelic period, that's really what ruled his thoughts when he was writing is, in fact, reflect the crowd who was buying, and he did so very well. And it's sad to note that he passed away, and that was January 29th, and in Detroit, 81 years old. So a life well lived, and rest in peace, Barrett. And sorry about the royalties on Money. I've always wondered about that. All right, so of course we'll play some Barrett Strong, and we won't play Money because every obit I heard, of course, what's in the background, Money, you know, or one of the psychedelic songs. So we won't do that. We'll play something else that Barrett co-wrote and recorded, and I think in 1964 actually. The other death, and I'm waiting for the third because it always seems that things happen in threes. But the other death was Charlie Thomas of the Drifters. You know, it's interesting. I saw an article written by somebody around 2017 who was complaining about the fake groups that appear. And in this case, he had gone to see the Drifters. And of course, the modern day versions of these groups very often don't contain an original member. And it's a shred of their former selves. Some are licensed, some are not. But in this case, the guy was complaining that he didn't see an original Drifter. And then he said, like, who is Charlie Thomas? What? Charlie Thomas was not an original Drifter from the standpoint of Clyde McFatter's group, but he not only was an original Drifter from the standpoint of Benny King's group, but it really was his group, not Benny King's group, that was signed by George Treadwell. And to back this up a bit, I don't know how much we've talked about the Drifters, and that could take an entire night, to say the least. But there were two distinct Drifters groups. The first one was the one that Clyde McFatter started. And by the way, George Treadwell, the manager, he might not have been the impetus for starting the Drifters. It's said that Amit Erdogan was, because Amit told Clyde McFatter, and his great voice, you need a group behind you. You need to form a group. And Clyde McFatter did, but that group, most of these people you've never heard of, because George Treadwell fired them before they ever got to a record contract. However, one of them, Lil David, actually named the Drifters, and they were not named because they drifted in and out of other groups. It was each of the members had a choice, and they put it in a hat, and they pulled out a name, and it was Little David's group, the Drifters, and he picked it from a book that his father had been reading that had Drifter in the title. So that's how that happened. But be that as it may, it was not too long, by 1958 or so, that George Treadwell tired of the Drifters. By this time, Clyde McFatter had left, but he owned the name, and so he absolutely had the right to use it And so we probably talked about the fit that led to him disbanding the Drifters, but he did. And then he finds the Five Crowns, and that was Benny King's group. And you hear a lot about that. But what you don't often hear is Benny King, who was Benjamin Nelson at the time, wasn't the lead singer. This was Charlie Thomas's group. But in a session that Charlie Thomas was not performing to Jerry Wexler's satisfaction, Jerry said, "Well, Benny King can, you know, stand in for you, and later we'll put your voice on it, Charlie." And ultimately, they didn't put his voice on it. Now, it was interesting that Benny King did write "Stand by Me," but he wrote it for the Drifters, whether he would sing lead or not. However, what occurred there was that the contracts were interesting in that Benny King had a solo contract with Atlantic as opposed to the Drifters with a group contract. And Benny King took the song to Lieber and Stoller, who, of course, were very tight with the Atlantic crowd. And it was a deal where he didn't even think the session was necessarily anything that was going to go. But nonetheless, there it was. Now, back to Charlie in the group of Drifters. And of course, Benny King, much like Clyde McFadder, left pretty early in the game. But in May of 1964, the Drifters were scheduled to record "Under the Boardwalk," and it had been written for Rudy Lewis. Absolutely. Unfortunately, earlier that day, he was found dead in his Harlem hotel room, and that's murky, to say the least. He had done "Up on the Roof" and "On Broadway," and so they got Johnny Moore to come in and do "Under the Boardwalk," but for other songs, they got Charlie Thomas, like "I Don't Want to Go On Without You," and ultimately, Charlie did "Sweets for My Sweet" as well, probably his most well-known song, so of course, that's the one we'll probably play. So there you go. Rest in peace, Charlie Thomas and Barrett Strong. We can talk about that or anything that's on your mind. 888-876-5593, 888-88-ROLLIE. The Super Bowl is coming up, of course. And I admit to knowing less than nothing about sports, and have proven it embarrassingly so on so many different occasions. But nonetheless, I do know a little about money. Back to Barrett Strong. And I have some facts and figures for the upcoming Super Bowl. Nothing if not a cash cow. So all that and more coming up. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Honey, you say that you would never leave me. Then you turn around, oh girl, and you wanna deceive me. Well, why don't you make up your mind, baby? Why don't you make up your mind? You know one day you will,
one day you will
have a next you want,
the next day you want.
One minute you say you love me,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
and the next minute you don't,
yeah, yeah. Well, why don't you make up your mind, baby? Why don't you make up your mind?
You know that I love you,
love you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Barrett Strong. Make Up Your Mind, 1964 on Tolly, which, of course, was Motown's subsidiary. And actually, I'm lying. I'm lying through my teeth. Tolly was VJ. Oh, my God. All right. Well, nonetheless, Richard Parker and Barrett Strong wrote that. So there. And I wish that it had charted, but in fact it hadn't. So yeah, absolutely, BJ had Tolly. In fact, that's what they released the two singles by the Beatles at the start of Beatlemania, "Twist and Shout" and "Love Me Do." So yes, absolutely, BJ. So, but then Barrett Strong went back to Motown as a writer, which we talked about earlier. So yeah, but that was Tolly. Got to give BJ some credit. And I thought it was a good little record. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 888-88. 98 Raleigh. And Edward is on the north side. Welcome to WGN Radio, Edward.
Hi, Raleigh. Thank you so much for talking about the Drifters. They were my favorite group of all time.
Now, which ones, the early or the latter?
You know, I would say both, because okay. I came up, you know, with Clyde McFadder and later with Benny King.
Okay.
So, but anyway, you know, there's certain records you'll always hear by the Drifters, like There Goes My Baby, Under the Boardwalk, Up on the Roof. But I'll tell you two songs I haven't heard probably in 40 years. I probably haven't heard them since they made them. And that is I'll Take You Home and When My Little Girl Is Smiling.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If you could play either one of those, I would love it.
Sure, no, and I've heard them this week because I play them on KJ, but, so I'll do that. So sure, and When My Little Girl Is Smiling, Big Beach record, too. So, yeah, I got them both.
I'd really like to hear either one. It'd be fine.
How about both?
All right. Yeah, that's great, too.
All right, thanks, Edward. Appreciate the call. All right, so, and of course I got to play Sweets for My Sweets too, because it's so nice to hear Charlie Thomas do that, so we can play all the Drifters you want. And I also promised Eric, and Erica, as you know, is in California, and we are praying for his Yorkie Maltese, who is not doing well at the moment. But I'll tell you more about that, and I have that written down here somewhere, as usual. The show has barely started, and it's thank God it's not video. It is a complete mess already. And I had notes, I tell you, notes, and most of that is courtesy of Carol, who keeps me honest and does show prep, and then I know what's happening. So let's, for a moment here, since it's in front of me, we can talk about the total cost of the Super Bowl, and boy, do they ever make money, to say the least. And if you're wondering, more than ever. So what's the cost of a 30-second advertisement in the Super Bowl? And, of course, that's the figure you usually see. And, it's up there, all right. It's going to be a whopping $7 million for 30 seconds in 2023, it's estimated. And that's up from 6.5 in 2022 and 5.6 in 2021. And what blew me away is the average cost of a ticket. Now, of course, you know, this includes the deluxe boxes and you know, the nosebleed seats and everything in between. But the average cost, if you add that all together and divide by the number of seats, $9,341. I don't know about you, but there's nothing that I want to see that's worth $9,341. And I realize that, you know, some of this, of course, if not most of it, is going to be defrayed by corporate spending and things like that. But speaking of just consumer spending on the Super Bowl, you know, whatever it is you're buying related, $82 million. And total ad revenue, I mentioned about $7 million a 30-second spot. Well, total ad revenue for the Super Bowl itself, they're expected to bring in $489 million, plus actually a little more than that. So this is big business, but not as big for the players. Now, I found this one interesting. The winner's earnings, on average, okay, 2021, the successful player, you know, the player on the successful team walked away with about $150,000 for the game. 2022 was up to $157,000. Well, things are rising. Not this year. Down to $136,474 per player. So last year, the LA Rams took home that $157,000, while this year, well, it'll either be the Chiefs or whoever. right. I knew this the other day. The Chiefs, yeah, because the Chiefs played the Bengals and the Bengals didn't win. Okay, I got that one, but I forgot who they're playing. Was it the Bills? I don't know. $136,000. See, you know more than that. So it's a 13% decrease in winnings monies for the players this year. And I don't see anything about why. But I'm sure there's probably all sorts of pros on that as well. Now, for your $7 million for your 30-second ad, and most of them, I tell you what, they're trying to be creative, but half the time it really makes you wonder. How many people are they going to reach? Oh, they expect to reach over 109.9 million people. So, yeah, about roughly 110 million people. $7 million bucks for that? I don't know. So rising over $1 million in the last 2 years alone. So interesting facts and figures. And we'll have Barrett Strong. Well, we played some Barrett Strong, Make Up Your Mind. We'll have some Drifters coming up. In fact, the first one, like I say, with Charlie Thomas on lead for Sweets for My Sweets. But first, we'll check into the WGN Radio newsroom to find out what's going on WGN Radio.
Sweets for my sweets, sugar for my heart.
James, and that is Charlie Thomas, Sweets for My Sweet, 1961, August, yes, indeed. And we had Edward, who had just requested When My Little Girl Was Smiling. You know, Charlie Thomas was lead on that, too, so I'll play that. And I'll Take You Home, Johnny Moore sang lead on that. So all fine choices, so indeed, yeah. It was Claus Ogerman who arranged When My Little Girl Was Smiling. It's a fine record, right? So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And I don't know. I'm looking here at the callers, and I see a blank line. And so I don't know. John will have to tell me if anybody's on it or not. But as far as I know, line two has nobody, but it's lit up. So we'll find out. And yes, if there's anything on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine, and we can talk about it. So other than that, as I mentioned, Carol does me this great show prep and lets me know what's going on this day in history. I got to find it because there's all sorts of things as usual. I'm not quite sure how we celebrate some of this, but there are a number of things that might be interesting. And of course, James gives me all the wonderful show prep too of stories, which I haven't had much of a time to look at today, but I will. By the way, Betty Levette turned 77 yesterday, and talk about somebody who never gets her due. I thought she did some great songs, and yeah, she had her issues though, and I'm well recognizing that. But even so, 77, born in Muskegon, Michigan, grew up in Detroit. And, yeah, there were some wonderful Betty Levette songs. So 888-876-5593. Like I say, it was all this great thing about what was going on this date that I've now completely... oh, here it is. All right. So we'll know, maybe. Yes, I don't know who decides these things, but January 31st, that is today, Tuesday, January 31st, is Backwards Day. I'm going to have to find out how we celebrate, because I'm not 100% sure who... Well, I don't know who proclaims them no matter what, but who came up with this Backwards Day. And the 31st, it's National Backwards Day, as you may have heard. And apparently, do everything backwards. I don't think so. All right, and as I say, I don't see anything that tells me who came up with this. Yeah, or how it becomes official. Do you just pay the, Chase's Almanac or whatever it is that lists these things? Yes, but National Yeah, no, I don't think there was a congressional move about that. Tomorrow's National Freedom Day and National Girls and Women's in Sport. And also, it's the first day of Black History Month, which is nice. And last year, we went down Record Row, both of them in Chicago. Yeah, the original Record Row and then the new one, both on the same street, but separated by a good 45 blocks. All right, so James is on the south side, and always always good to hear from James. He gave me another 300 stories today, and ingrate that I am, I didn't even have a chance to look at them, so what's happening?
How are you doing? I'm glad you took my call.
Always.
Hope you're feeling better.
Yes.
Well, let's just say we might say about some of these, a few of these ones. Well, what was going on with some of these people?
Well, I'll tell you the first.
That's like
the first one I looked at though was that a brand of eye drops could give you resistant bacterial infections, and I went, "Oh my God!" Because we take eye drops, but it turns out that it's not anything we use. It's apparently the EzraCare artificial tears, and apparently it's had three people. One died, and three people left with permanent vision loss. I've never heard of EzraCare artificial tears. Have you?
No, I'm assuming it's in some place that I spent a lot of time looking at eye drop display at Walgreens.
Yeah,
have not come across it.
Yeah, first thing I thought when I saw it, I said, "Well, maybe it's like the dollar store or something." I don't know. But thank God it's not any brand that I've heard of. So that's good. Now on the next story you sent is a probiotic supplement to fight antibiotic resistant infections. How about that? Maybe not in time. So it's what is this probiotic? I gotta find out about that. And
it's supposed to the nutrients provide certain other things that your body needs.
Well, yeah, but which one? You see, there's so many probiotics. There's a ton of them. And so this article is claiming that one of them cures or at least treats Staphylococcus. I don't know. So I'm looking in the article to find out which one.
And the bad part about this story, it wouldn't come up. It kept, which, of course, comes back to what happened to me last night. Okay, when I was waiting on the phone, for some reason it said mobile network unavailable, and it like cut me off. So apparently you still had me on a space on there, but I was like gone. That would remind me of like those ghost things on the CTA tracker, bus and train tracker.
well, there you go. So apparently, according to this article, it's Bacillus subtilis. And it's also known as hay bacillus or grass bacillus. Good. Can't wait to eat grass. So that's apparently maybe they've got it in a better form. You know, I don't really want to sit down to a meal of hay, but I assume they have it as a wonderful probiotic in pill form.
Me
near you. Yeah. So that's.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about, and I do not endorse or have any knowledge about this whatsoever, but Bacillus subtilis, it almost rhymes, is in fact, it sounds like a failed singer. Yeah, now, live on stage, it's Bacillus subtilis. Well, maybe it's a stripper. In any way, the deal is that they say that this works.
Oh, yeah, I would think that stripper might be able to, which remind me of that final answer. The only thing I had even close in a ballpark among my was a strip. And I remembered, quite well. That Little Egypt did the first strip piece at the Columbian Exposition in Chicago, 1893.
Yes, and then later, of course, the Coasters did a record. Step right up and see Little Eva do her famous dance of the pyramid. She walks, she talks, she crawls on her belly like a reptile.
And of course, somebody even did one ones from the 50s. I guess you could say the last heyday of for less. Basically, a few singers did a few Okay, songs based on a strip. Obviously.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes. Well, always good to see this, and I promise to do my homework, and I will look at these stories. Unfortunately, I was busy eating an insurance agent today, eating him alive, and yelling and screaming and all that. And then halfway through the conversation, he says, "Now, sir." I said, "And on top of that, you think I'm a guy?" And so
oh, well, that guess what? That was Ed Bannett.
Yeah. Well, that's what John said. John said too. Yeah,
because just think about it. You have him there, basically you roast him on the grill, basically.
Yeah.
And he's like pretty much like a steak that you have decided I'm not going to have this being done.
Yeah, well, there you have it. But anyway, so that was my day. But I will absolutely read all these stories, and we can convene tomorrow and see what else you got.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Okay, because there was some that hadn't gotten a chance because the phone went to one of those strange things where it was doing most of yesterday where it wouldn't mobile network. So there's several of them like sitting there in no man's land.
Yeah, well, that's called Cell Hill. All right, so we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, appreciate it.
Okay, you
all
take
right, good deal, James. Okay. Yeah, now, one of the stories, and I haven't I haven't had a chance to look at any of them, but the headline, Colorado funeral home director sentenced to 20 years in jail for illegally selling body parts. Now, precisely what is he doing? Because he's a funeral director. It's too long for any transplants. You know, you're not going to get a liver from the corpse into somebody working. What is he selling and why? Yeah, well, I can think of a few things and none of them are good. So 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, we'll get to Fran and Austin. Oh, backwards day. And Ruth and Gurney, who's got, day titles. Oh, we've got a lot of them here. But I want to mention the CC Radio Solar. This is a terrific radio. If you're a radio fan, I know you know about the Sea Crane catalog, but have you been there lately? CCRadio.com. You will see some of the neatest products. Now, every radio that Bob Crane has ever developed has just the best reception, superior to anything on the market today. Now, I know you can compare it to, you know, the Royal 265 in 1965 by Zenith, and you say, well, I'm not sure. But as far as things on the market today, no. Bob Crane, like most of us, loves radio and was just disgusted with the state of reception in most modern radio. So he designed better ones, and they are. Not only that, but so many have additional features you just don't find anywhere else. And one of those, of course, is the CC Radio Solar. If the power's out, what do you want? Well, if it's nighttime, you want a flashlight and you'd like the radio. You'd like to know what's going on, maybe, and you'd like to be able to see. Well, how about a radio that has a built-in flashlight in it? Not only that, but how about one that's not going to need batteries? Because that's the other thing. You find the flashlight, the batteries are dead. Not with the CC Radio Solar, because you don't need batteries. Oh, you can use them, and they'll last for a long time. But you can also use solar power. That's right. Set it in a sunny window for a few hours, actually. It's got a battery strength meter. You can set it in a sunny window, and then you'll be listening for days on that alone. It'll store up enough energy to do all sorts of things, including bring your dead cell phone battery back to life. But when all else fails, you can hand crank it for about 30 seconds. It's going to play for about 30 minutes, meaning you will always have something that will work because maybe you forgot to set it in the sun. Maybe the batteries aren't working. Maybe you don't have an AC adapter. You don't need any of that. What's really neat is about the size of a brick with a clean, modern digital design. It's got 5 one-touch memory presets and superior reception. And excellent audio. You can enjoy it every day. It's got AM, it's got FM, it's got the weather band and weather alerts. And tell you got a power outage, radio is part of the package. Yeah, radio and a flashlight. Well, check this out. Check out the CC Radio Solar at ccradio.com. If you can't go online, you can call them. 800-522-8863, 800-522-2, and the world's best customer service. You can order right over the phone, or they'll send you a full-color catalog absolutely free. 800-522-8863. Oh, for faster shipping, REI and Amazon, that works too. But for the real deal experience, ccradio.com. ccradio.com, you look at that CC Radio Solar, you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
Every time my baby and I have a quarrel, I swear I won't give in. Then my baby starts to smile at me. And I know, I just can't win. When my little girl is smiling, there's nothing more I can say.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and my little girl is smiling. The Drifters. The flip side was Mexican Divorce. Rudy Lewis sang lead on that one. It was about January 1962, and it was Charlie Thomas doing lead on When My Little Girl Is Smiling, and Edward requested that along with I'll Take You Home, and he'll be hearing both of them. All right, so 888-876-5593. That would be 8888 Raleigh. And we have Bill in Boston. All right, Bill, thanks for calling WGN.
Oh, you're welcome, Raleigh. A question on 45s. When back in the 50s, I guess that's probably when they first came out, and when they were getting selling, how much would they, these, especially these smaller record companies, make on, you know, if they had a hit record?
Very little. In reality. And, you know, when you're talking about smaller record companies, the first thing is that most of them didn't have their own distribution. So they were beholden to the local distributors. And, of course, if they didn't have a hit after the record that sold, they might not get paid at all. The other thing, let's say that on average those 45 sold for 79 cents. Well, of course, they're discounting it to the retailers, so they're not even getting 50 cents a record on that. So an accurate counting, it's really hard to say, but this was not big money. And that's why all of the independent guys were able to really prosper, because the major labels weren't concentrating it. You know, of course, you've got, you know, a Mitch Miller who refuses to put out a rock and roll album and all that. But even with singles, Columbia wasn't going to do that much. The major labels weren't. Now, when you're talking about giant acts that are selling millions of records, the Elvises of the world, of course, that's big bucks. But you're talking about just a reasonably sized hit by a rock, by Danny and the Juniors on ABC Paramount, something like that. It's not a lot of money.
That's what I was thinking, because by the time they, as assuming they were paying, you know, the songwriter, the artist, the publishers, and so forth.
Well, firstly, they probably weren't paying the artists. You know, that was rare that the artists actually got their royalties. But the songwriter and the publisher, that's a prescribed royalty, and yes, that was going to come out of it. But as far as paying the artists, no. Their theory, because most of these artists were kids for the most part, their theory was, you should be grateful to us because you're getting more money for your appearances because you have a hit record. Now, there's another thing. Even the guys who weren't unscrupulous and just weren't going to pay, the way they did the accounting made it almost impossible for somebody to make money, and here's why. For every record a label put out that was a hit, there were a lot of records that were flops by everybody. And so let's say you're Joe Smith and you're a recording act and you have a big hit that's finally sold 500,000 copies. Well, maybe it's the sixth record you've done for the label and the first five were total stiffs. Well, the label's going to go ahead and take all of the expenses in all those first five records, the sessions and the releases and all that. And see, so by the time the sixth one that's a hit, they're subtracting all of the expenses from every record this poor Joe Smith ever made. So, and And by the way, that is done to this day in major labels. And a scrupulous artist, you know, a good artist with a good manager will say, that's not the way we're going to do the accounting. But it's fairly standard fare. And that's if they were playing by the rules. Again, you talk about these guys in the late 50s, and most of them weren't going to pay royalties.
Now, when two sides of the record. Now, when a record sold and a hit on one side and maybe nothing on the other, would they both get both sides, the writers and publishers get the same?
Absolutely. Same with album cuts. And, you know, this is an interesting thing, and this will prove why I'm not wealthy and why I am totally an idiot. When I was a record promoter and when I was managing Charlie Rich, all this promotional stuff, his business manager came to me and said, "Can you write?" I said, "Well, prose, yeah. Records, songs, probably not." He said, "Could you try?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, if you can write anything that we can barely sing, we'll put it on an album cut for you." And Charlie was selling, like, you know, 6 million albums. And wow. I basically said, "I'm too busy." And I look back on this and I think this was the greatest gift anyone ever offered me, and I didn't take them up on it. I don't know if I could have, but I didn't even try. But anyway, yes, statutorily, the publisher and the writer back then got 2 cents per selection per side.
Now, you mentioned was it Lieber and Stoller?
Oh, yes.
And I had heard that, were they powerful enough or enough influence that they could get both sides of a record?
They probably were powerful enough to do that, but they did a number of other things, too. You know, for a while, they also owned a label with, they owned Redbird with George Goldner. But, they had the power to do all sorts of things, no two ways about it. And the other thing, though, is even a Lieber and Stoller, when you're writing a hit for Elvis Presley, Colonel Parker is probably going to have some conditions. You know, it depends how big the act is. Now, when you're a songwriter, you have the absolute right to decide who makes the first recording of the song. So nobody can record it until you grant the right of the first recording. But
I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah. Oh man. I've told this story before, but I'll never get it, because it was Kenny Nolan who had some hits in the '70s, and he had written a song, and Charlie Rich's business manager took the song, and Kenny Nolan thought that he was giving it to Charlie Rich, and the business manager gave it to another act in the stable who was not well known, and of course, Kenny Nolan came unglued, but the reality was that he should have read the contract closer. It didn't specify it had to be Charlie Rich. In any event, you get to pick who's first, but the minute you pick who's first, after that, anyone can record the song. You have no control.
Jeez.
All right, well, hang on a minute. Don't go away, and I'll answer all the rest of the questions, and we'll pick it up right there after the news, right here on WGN Radio.
Everybody knows you came with him, but another girl caught his eye. Now you're sitting there all alone, watching them dance by.
I'll take you home.
And I know you're wondering what you'll do if he doesn't come back to you. But don't worry, I'll take you home. So little girl, don't you be blue. Now I know that you wore that pretty red dress just for him to see.
I'll take you home.
Yeah, but I wanna tell you that red dress looks good to me.
I'll take you home.
Oh, I know you feel like you wanna die, but try pretending that I'm your guy. And don't worry, I'll take you home. So little girl, now don't you cry. I'll take you home. This is over. I'll take you home. Just wait and see. You're gonna dance that last dance with me. Let me tell you now, I know the way that you feel. I can understand.
I'll take you home.
'Cause I had a date just like you when the dance began.
I'll take you home.
But the girl take you home, 'cause little girl, I'm lonely too.
that'll help if I turn on the right microphone, won't it? Yeah, WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Like I say, that's a familiar voice. It's Johnny Moore who did so many of the leads on the Drifters' One Way Love and Under the Boardwalk, Sand in My Shoes, you name it. Of course, I'll Take You Home. It was the summer of 1963 when that came out. And Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil wrote it, but Lieber and Stoller produced it. We were talking about Lieber and Stoller and Weil in another minute with Bill. But, Bill, I was remiss in telling you where the money might come from a hit record for this little record label that we were talking about. And Okay. Bear in mind that most of the time, the record label owner was going to hold the publishing, you know, like a Morris Levy or something like that. And so maybe the group writes the song and they're the writers or whatever, but the publishing belongs to whatever company the record label owner set up. Well, because he owns the publishing, he's the guy who's going to lease those records when it comes to the movies, commercials, everything else later. And
Okay. That
is how all the artists at Cameo Parkway got screwed blue, because when Alan Klein bought the label, he refused to license. And there's all sorts of stories as to why. Me, I thought it was just like the movie The Producers, but I can't know for sure. In any event, all those years, you know, Bobby Rydell, the Dovells, the Orlons, Chubby Checker, nothing was leased because Alan B. Klein would not release any leasing or distribution of those masters for commercial use.
Now, just getting into the Boston area here, mm-hmm. We had the two big, most popular evening disc jockeys were Joe Smith
and Arnie Ginsberg. Of course.
Joe Smith, I think, was 8 to 11,
uh-huh.
And then Arnie Ginsberg would come on 11 to 2 or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one thing Joe Smith used to do, he would have something called the Record of the Week, and he would package that and, you know, get it out to all the local mm-hmm. record stores.
Sure.
And, you know, they'd sell those there. So he must have, obviously, he's getting a cut of those, too. I mean,
Joe is still alive. He's 91 years old. Call me back when he's gone.
Oh, yeah. He went out to the West Coast and became very successful.
It's extremely successful. I did an interview with him somewhere a few years ago. Oh, it's about 10 years ago now. But yes, he's... wait a minute. Here's one that says he died. Oh, how about this? He died at 91 years old in 2019.
Oh, okay.
Well, how about that? Sure, Joe got a nice lucrative take, but that was not unusual back then.
Yes, now... And I wrote, he had a kind of an interesting book I read. You probably can get used copies, where he wrote about, maybe it was interviews he had with all these different artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was maybe just a chapter on each, but it was an interesting book. And,
I think I've got it. I think it was called Off the Record or something. He wrote it with... I've got it. It's somewhere here. Absolutely. So, yes, he died in 2019. I guess I could tell some of those stories. But back to... And he did very well. I'm not meaning to cast any aspersions. He did extremely well. And remember, when you're talking the 1950s, payola was legal unless you were the licensee. So it wasn't anything that he was doing that was illegal at the time. But he enriched himself, of course. But,
and it would be a song that, you know, maybe was coming up and he'd push it and sell his records and so forth.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Get his cut.
A common practice. But back to Lieber and Stoller. You know, they met when they were kids. I think Lieber was a senior in high school, and Stoller came out to go to City College or something in L.A. And they loved the blues. That's how they met. They bonded over the blues in the Fairfax District. And, you know, of course, when they wrote Hound Dog, they didn't write it for Elvis. They didn't even know who Elvis was at that point. They wrote it for Big Mama Thornton. And when they wrote what became Kansas City, well, that was originally K.C. Lovin, and they wrote it for Little Willie Littlefield in 1952. So what happened to them... To start them off was getting in bed with Lester Sill. And Lester Sill, in fact, later, you know, of course, his relationship with Phil Spector, that was Phil S. Records. But Lester Sill formed a record label with Lieber and Stoller when they were, you know, in their early 20s, Spark Records. Well, and in fact, Smokey Joe's Cafe, which was the Robins that later, some of them became the Coasters, that was on that label. Well, Atlantic Records bought Spark Records. And when they did, they hired Lieber and Stoller, but Lieber and Stoller were smart. They refused to do an employee contract. They refused to do anything that would have been exclusive to Atlantic. So technically, they became the first independent record producers.
Gee.
And so that.
And I heard an interview with Stoller.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lieber maybe has passed away.
Yeah, in 2011. It's been a while.
Yeah, and Stoller was, this was fairly recently, and he explained, he played piano
yes.
on several of those records
yes.
that they did, yeah.
Yes.
So.
And, yeah, in fact, Stoller had a great quote once. He said, we don't write songs, we write records. And he was... He was 100% right about that. So, yeah, but you look at it, and if it weren't for Atlantic buying Spark, I don't know that they would have, you know, would have been willing to do what they did with Lieber and Stoller, but it certainly worked out for everyone involved.
Yeah, and he told the story about Lieber had been over in Europe, I think just on vacation, and he came back, I don't know whether it was on a boat, you know, and he met him, and he said, oh, we have a hit, you know, all over, Hound Dog.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you know, Big Mama's again, they did. He said, no, Elvis Presley. He said, who's Elvis Presley?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah exactly. So, sure.
No, they did well. Well, listen, nice talking with you. I'll let you go to somebody else. Could I have you... I don't know if you wanted to play it, but sometime play, because Freddie Cannon was a local guy here, the dedication song he did.
Oh, yeah, I have that. Absolutely. I can play that. I'll do that.
Okay.
And by the way, the ship you're talking about, when it was Stoller who went to Europe, and that was the Andrea Doria.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Absolutely, which was rammed and sunk by the Stockholm. And,
yeah,
that was the Andrea Doria. And, yes.
And was he on that
yes.
when they had the accident?
Yes, he and his first wife, Merrill.
Gee.
And I don't know. They finished the journey aboard another ship, the Cape Ann. So, yeah, they were rescued. And it was apparently Lieber met him at the dock talking about how big Hound Dog was. And that's when Stoller said, who's Elvis? Elvis who?
Yeah.
yeah, so you betcha. I think when he went over there, when Stoller went over there, Edith Piaf had a French version of black denim trousers and motorcycle boots that they had written for the Cheers.
Really?
Yes, yes. And I think that's what gave him enough money for he recently got married to Merrill, that was his first wife, to actually go on the ship and go over there. So, yeah, that's how that trip happened.
I didn't realize they had written that song.
Absolutely, they wrote that song. Yeah.
Now, what about that song, Black Slacks?
Oh,
do you remember that?
Of course I remember Black Slacks.
Yeah.
Joe Bennett and the Sparkle Tones.
You're right, yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I'd have to look at the record to see who wrote that.
Yeah.
So I don't think... that it was, in fact, I'd almost bet it's not Lieber and Stoller, but that was on ABC Paramount, so I'm almost positive that wasn't Lieber and Stoller. I'll look it up, though.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, appreciate it. All right.
Bye-bye.
So, yeah, I never really thought very much about Joe Bennett and the Sparkle Tones and who wrote that, but now, of course, now that we said that, I've got to look it up, so let me see who did Joe Bennett here. I'm very slow at this, which is what... Sometimes people think, well, you just read it all online. No, I'm not that quick. Okay. So, Black Slacks. All right, let's see what we get. Here we go. All right. So, who wrote this? T. Austin And Bob Gaudio. Well, how about that? I guess I should... Oh, wait a minute. That's Short Shorts. That's not the right record. That is absolutely not the right record. Wait a minute. That's not even possible. Yeah, I was going to say, come on here. Bennett and Denton. So Joe Bennett gets writer's credit with Denton. Now, the question is, who is Denton? That may... That may right, Bob Gaudio. That'd be really interesting. Yeah. So who's Denton? Jimmy Denton. And I don't know. Was Jimmy Denton? I guess he was a member of the Sparkle Tones. Maybe, I don't know. You could do the homework on that and let me know. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. I'll stop with this. I'm entertaining myself entirely too much. So we'll talk to Fran, and we got Frank, and we got, oh, Johnny D's calling, and we got Ruth, and we got Rick in California. So there's plenty of things to talk about and more records to play, including, I did promise Eric last night. I said, yes, we absolutely would, and so we absolutely will. And we'll do it next, coming up on WGN Radio. Christmas record, but I thought it was one of the neatest things. He's J.D. McPherson. We were talking about him last night when Eric called, and yeah, he said, will you play anything by him? I said, absolutely, I'll pick something, and he gave me a free range, so that's exactly what I did. Holly Carroll, Candy and Joy. It was on New West. It was a single in 2019, and his backing vocals are the Giardinaires. I have no idea what they were thinking with that name, but I can go in a few places that I'll avoid right now. That was recorded at Alex the Great. Alex the Great's been around, I don't know, 20, 30 years now. It's in the Berry Hill section of Nashville, and that is the deal. And what else can I say? Nothing, except where was my list here? Because I had this on it, because, of course, we are, maybe this isn't today, I don't know. We are keeping Eric's dog in mind, and I know it here is somewhere. But, and I've, yeah, right. Well, I'll find it. And apparently I'm not doing good at that. Or anything else, really. If you could see the studio, well, you don't want to. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And that takes us to Fran in Austin. How's it going, Fran?
Hey, Raleigh. Well, you were talking earlier about Backwards Day or something like that.
Yes, it is Backwards Day. Wear your clothes backwards. I can't imagine it myself.
Well, that reminded me. Do you remember the backwards speech guy that Art Bell used to have on?
Oh, absolutely. Reverse speech with the backwards
reverse
dude.
Reverse speech. That was it. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
That was That was fascinating. I never knew. I was like, okay, is this real? But it sure sounded real.
Right. No, absolutely. Apparently, the guy is an act, obviously. So I found one online that there was one who was on one of those America's Got Talent, somebody from Nashville trying to do it, I think. So, but the backwards dude, yes.
Yeah, there was some interesting stuff because I think they had, I forget which president was talking at that time, and they were talking all about this great bill that they had signed, and, you know, the Republicans and Democrats agreed on it, and yada, yada, and played it backwards and said, we had to sign it.
Those were a lot of fun, yes, absolutely.
And then the one that really got me was they had a little baby, and the little baby is doing, you know, what babies do. Babies in the bathtub, go, you know, yeah. Wah, you know, doing all that, and reversed it, and it said, "Daddy, help me."
Wow.
That's fascinating. So after I heard those shows, I started recording myself and playing myself backwards all the time, and I never heard anything.
Well, right. No, John Austin, I found his apparently audition for America's Got Talent. So of course, I'm doing this cold, so I hope to hell. Yeah, well, I know Dan and Master Control will watch out for me just in case, because I don't know.
Yeah.
What's your name?
My name is John Austin.
And where are you from, John?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
How old are you, John?
I'm 50 years old.
Okay, so why now America's Got Talent?
Well, I've been singing since I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
And some friends of mine said, you need to go to America's Got Talent. They're going to love what you do.
And you think you could win this?
I do.
Okay. I'm not going to ask any more questions. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, we used to dig more feet and feet. Fun and hour of it run, yeah.
Hang on. Is there something wrong with the track?
It might be better if they play what we just recorded in reverse up on the screen here.
Baby, just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry. You don't have to worry, cause baby, there ain't no mountain high enough.
I love it.
Okay. Howie, yes or no?
I love that. I think this is an amazing...
Yeah, so there he is.
Wow.
Yeah.
I heard that he and Art Bell have some kind of falling out.
Oh, I don't
know.
Gary
was telling me something about that. Do you know anything about, or can you talk about
that?
Well,
I would if I could, because, you know, Art's not with us anymore, but I have no idea. I wonder what it was.
Oh. I don't know. Apparently, he insulted.
I'm looking.
He insulted his wife.
I don't know.
I don't know. There was some kind of big. You know, Gary was telling me there was some big drama about it. So I said, "I'll ask Raleigh. She'll know about it."
No, I've never heard about it. I mean, I knew who the backwards guy was, so give me credit for that. But I have absolutely no idea. About, I don't usually get into people's personal lives, but I don't know.
Hang on
a minute. Don't go away.
Okay.
I think that the news has already started, and rightfully so. All right, so.
Radio,
yeah, very
on
good.
Air and online.
I go on pretending, on
WGN Radio. I'm Robbie James. And those are the Versatiles. And it was Nick in Baltimore who wanted Just Pretending. Happy to play it because most everybody asked for the other side, Blue Feeling. But that was on Ramco in 1962, and that's Just Pretending. And we're talking to Fran and Austin. So sorry to rudely interrupt you there.
Oh, no problem. I mean, we were just talking about the backward speech guy.
Yes, the backward guy. And in fact, while the news was on, I was listening to an interview with him on WGN-TV.
Oh, wow. So he's still around, maybe?
Absolutely still around. I think he's from North Carolina. I think he's a film editor. But, you know, they were asking him, and he said, well, you know, after I started this YouTube channel and all that, people started to investigate, and turns out I'm autistic. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, well, that's a pretty broad spectrum, obviously, but that's
yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's what he was talking about, and John Sevier Austin. So.
Yeah, and then you know I remember back when you know they had that whole Paul's Dead thing.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Crazy stuff, and we were all trying to play our records backwards to get clues.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, Paul is dead. Yes, I know. And
yeah.
Ended the career of Robbie Young on WABC. It wasn't pretty.
I've always wondered how that started.
It started with college kids, actually. And it was sort of a thing that was around. And then one of them had called Robbie. Now, Robbie, by this time, he had gone to WABC in New York as a midday guy, and that didn't work out. But I should back up and say that I thought Robbie was terrific. But what he did, he didn't send an air check. He sent a produced tape that he made at Criteria Recording Studios. And Rick Sklar, the program director, didn't bother to come down to Miami where he was working to see what he really sounded like. So what Rick thought he was getting and what he got were two different things. And one of the reasons that he was quick to hire him without doing any further checking is the guy who owned Castro Convertibles that was a big sponsor on WABC, his daughter, Bernadette, really liked Robbie. And so he was hyping WABC on, you know, Robbie Young. So they hired him and at 1 to 3 in the afternoon at first. And it wasn't long before Robbie wound up on overnights. And Robbie liked to imbibe, to say the least. You know, he would drink anything. And so lighter fluid, it wouldn't have mattered. So the bottom line to all this was he was, you know, already in kind of sorry shape at this point. Too much alcohol,
right,
and too little pride. And somebody, one of these college kids had called him and told him about this. And so here he is in the middle of the night on WABC. I believe this was the summer of 69. And he says, must have been like 2 a.m, the Beatle Paul may be dead. And and goes on from the right. Exactly. And, well, there went the Judson phone exchange, you know, forget it. And so, It really did. He blew up the phone exchange. But what happened was Rick Sklar pulled him off the air mid-shift and had Les Marshak, the news guy, finish the hour till they could get somebody in there. And so that was it for WABC. Then he was at CBS. We're on a number of other stations and all that. But he was a hilarious guy. Unfortunately, he just had his own demons that finally got him.
So many of the hilarious people do.
Isn't that the truth? Yes, exactly. And so Robbie's demons finally got him. One of the problems was when he got back to Florida, he ultimately wound up with the Levitz campaign, and he was the the commercial voiceover guy for Levitz for like 15 years.
You'll well, love it at Levitz.
That's right. Well, that was enough money to keep him drinking. And unfortunately, that enabled him. You know, he could continue. And ultimately, it killed him. His heart gave out when he was like 54 years old. But I'll never forget.
Wow.
I was down in Miami in 1975. And I had talked to Robbie, and Robbie was just getting out of rehab. And he said, I need a ride. I said, oh, I'll pick you up. You know, so I pick him up, and let's go get something to eat. And so we went to a Chinese restaurant. And I'll never forget it, because there's Robbie, and he's drinking. And I said, Robbie? And he said, it's rice wine, Raleigh. Rice is a vegetable. And Firstly, rice is a starch. But be that as it may, all alcohol comes from some form of grain. And, oh, this is good for me. And so I realized that that wasn't going to take. And, of course, it didn't, you know. So and it's sad because he was just brilliant. But, of course, the WABC thing was a disaster waiting to happen. Never, ever, ever send something that's not, you know, representative of what you're going to do. And so,
That spread like wildfire.
I mean, yeah. Well, like I say, it was already all this rumor stuff, but you know, you put it on 50,000 watts at night, you know, that's going everywhere. And, and it did. Well, you know, and to his dying day, he was convinced that the beetle paw was, in fact, it. Convinced.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. This guy ain't him. All right. But I have another friend who will remain nameless, and she's convinced of it, too. She, I don't care what you say. I know that's not him. And so, okay. So,
okay.
So, yeah, there's, why do you think he broke up with Jane Asher? I said, I don't know. It could have been the cheating. But, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, that might do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, but in any event, that was the deal. And yes, it did. It spread everywhere. But the idea of backward masking, you know, that concept had been around a long time.
Yeah, I know that, you know, when I did play, backwards and it says, Turn Me On Dead Man.
Right, right.
And I can't remember what song it was now, but I remember I played it backwards because I had, I have one of those four-track talking book machine things. So they play, four sides of a cassette and one side can play it backwards. And it did say that. I'm like, I can't believe that I actually heard that.
There's several things, but it's sort of like, you know, if you put enough monkeys in front of typewriters for a long enough period of time, you'll actually get a Shakespearean novel. Who knows? But you know, so who knows if any of this is by design? You know, I guess there's a list of songs that have backwards masking. A lot of these I can't say on the radio, but for very good reasons. A couple Def Leppard songs that actually are not not dirty, but Electric Light Orchestra. Apparently, there were from Secret Messages and others. There were all sorts of things. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and then there was that. What was that? That was a couple of years ago. There was something that everybody was hearing differently.
Well, that's most songs.
Yeah, I know. But it was some saying, and some people heard it one way, and some people heard it another way, and it was totally different. So it was just all this stuff is just fascinating to me. I almost took, because he was giving a some kind of classes or something.
Oh, yeah?
On how to hear this stuff.
Okay.
And I almost took it, but I lost my nerve. But
oh.
That would have been an interesting. Yeah. I was going to call him. He won't take me.
Oh.
The low self-esteem at that time, person.
Oh.
So, it's too bad because I would have liked to have seen at least what. You know, what it's all about.
Yeah.
Well, I have a good enough ear to do that. Now I don't, but I did then.
I have absolutely no ability for this, but Weird Al put a couple things in back. I remember Larry, apparently, he put in, well, you must have had an awful lot of free time on your hands. But and then Nature Trail to Hell at 3 minutes and 40 seconds in is Satan Eats Cheese Whiz. So
I'll have to see about that.
Well, I can't imagine.
I love Weird Al.
Yeah, absolutely. Just an absolute classic. Love his stuff.
Yeah. So I guess he's still doing it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's doing it. You betcha. He's making a living at this.
I haven't heard anything of his in years.
Well, you know, they've got the movie now, which is also kind of a pimp. It's kind of a parody, much like his own singing. But the movie is, in fact, out. So he's still active.
Oh,
Yeah,
now I vaguely remember hearing somebody talking about a Weird Al movie.
The documentary, yes, absolutely. I think we have the ability to watch it. It's called Weird, the Al Yankovic story, it's a spoof of documentaries. And so.
Oh, that would be great. I got to see that. Definitely.
Yeah, and I'm trying to see. It's on the Roku channel, on your Roku device.
Oh, darn, I don't have that.
Oh.
I'll try to find it. Maybe it'll be on YouTube.
Oh, it may be, for all I know. And if it isn't now, it might be soon. But let's go to YouTube and see what we get here. The Weird Al Yankovic. Yeah, spell, Raleigh. You can do this. All right. Let's see. All right. I've got the trailer for it. That's for sure. I've got the trailer, and then I've got the 10 Weird Al Yankovic Story Got Factually Right and Wrong, so I guess Al's talking about that, and, here's the official trailer, but these are still trailers. So, yes, I guess you have to find a Roku device.
Correct.
Here's a Weird, the Al Yankovic Story full movie HD quality, 2 hours and 5 minutes long. It's here.
Oh, okay.
So it's there, absolutely. It was posted 22 hours ago.
All right. I'm going to definitely watch that.
Yes, there it is. And I'd say watch it quickly. I don't know how long it will be there.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But it's there now.
I will do that.
All right.
Okay.
Good deal. Thanks for calling, Fran. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All
thanks,
right.
Raleigh.
888-876-5593. Oh, we got everybody. That's terrific. Oh, Eric and Joshua Tree. All right, so maybe we will get an update on Maxwell. I hope so. The 17-year-old Yorkie Maltese, and also see what he thought about the J.D. song we picked. All that and more coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Those are the Diablos, Nolan Strong and the Diablos, and Mind Over Matter, 1962, on Fortune. And Deborah Brown wrote it, yes, who owned the label with her husband, yes. Wonderful label, Fortune. And it was Stephanie who said, I want to hear Mind Over Matter. Happy to play it. Well, not only did I like it when it first came out, but boy, I'll tell you, Berry Gordy loved it. Within 5 days of it coming out, he had a cover version. In fact, he called the group The Pirates and put it out on Melody. It didn't help very much, but of course, he did get the writer right. Deborah Brown's name was on that as well. So, and what had happened was Berry Gordy had tried to get Nolan Strong away from the Browns and get him to sign with Motown Family, and he just wouldn't do it. And so when it came down to it, he heard Mind Over Matter, and he said, that's all right, I'm covering it. Well, it didn't much matter. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Johnny D, but first, Eric and Joshua Tree, how is Maxwell tonight?
Hey, Raleigh, I want to... He's good.
Go ahead.
I want to thank you guys, you and your audience, for your good intentions and your good thoughts. My caregiver came today, Olivia. God bless you, Olivia. I don't know if she's listening. She works all the time. She's taking us down to Thousand Palms to the vet on Saturday. My insurance policy doesn't pay for her to do that, but we're just doing this off the books, and I'll pay her.
How nice.
And maybe grab some lunch in Palm Springs, because yeah. I don't get down the hill that much.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that J.D. McPherson song that you played.
Had you heard it before?
I heard it before.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
I really dig into it. Yeah.
All right.
You know that Frogman Henry song that he does is kind of cool, too.
Okay. I will do that.
So, in my opinion.
All right.
So I'll give you guys an update after Saturday. Max goes in at 9:30 at Animal Samaritans in Thousand Palms.
All right. We will keep Maxwell in our prayers. All right. Well,
thank
you. Good thought. So, yes, can't wait to hear the outcome and hope it's really great. All right. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate you.
Okay, thanks. All right. So, yeah, 17-year-old Maxwell. And hopefully all will be well with him. Johnny D in Ohio, what's happening tonight, Johnny D?
Hey, funny lady.
What's going on?
You're not going to put any toilet flushing sounds, are you?
Well, I don't know. It depends what you're trying to sing.
I haven't called since the night you were flushing the toilet on me.
Well, now you understand it wasn't on you. It was on your choice that you were going to sing David Crosby records.
Yeah, somebody's, I think it was Fran, said somebody insulted somebody's wife or something. And
oh, yeah, it's the back
of my mind's going, because I know that, I think it was Neil Young was mad at David Crosby because David Crosby insulted his girlfriend or something. That was what the big feud was about. Anyhow, listen, funny lady.
Yeah, what's up?
Now, listen, firstly, I was thinking, is there a difference between a comedian and a comedian, like one's a woman?
Well, I-E-N-N-E is female, and I-A-N is male.
Well, you're the one. How would you say the female one?
Comedian. You'd pronounce them about the same. You just spell them differently.
Okay, I thought there was a difference.
Yeah.
So that's how I was going to say, hey, comedian. You
okay,
know.
Yeah.
But then I just thought, funny lady.
All right.
Anyhow, listen, yeah, I wasn't going to call you because of that. You know, I was going to pull a bill from Bella on you.
Yeah, we're really wondering about him, and I hope he's okay. You have no idea how many times John and I will say, whatever happened to that guy? And I mean, you know, we do know what his name would be, and we know where he is, but that's his own privacy. We're not going to try to find out. But I have no idea why he doesn't call anymore.
I don't know either. I mean, I know why I wasn't going to call.
Well, yes, yes, but we wonder if he's alive. We know you are.
Yeah, you ain't going to kill me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But we don't know.
As a matter of fact, I think, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm working on a payback song.
Oh, right? Man. Well, I'm sure that Mark will love that. Because I know
yeah, because Mark, he gets referenced. He's referenced.
Yeah. It's
oh,
big,
yeah.
Big moving day for Mark tomorrow. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay where you are. All right. We got another hour of this. We got it with Johnny D and Frank and Rick and Ruth and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
You've really made a fool of me. I'm laughing at myself. You like to think that you're Snow White and I am just your elf. No wonder people laugh at me and say when I come around, where is the circus? Here comes the clown. I really ought to dress myself in polka dots and lace and try to hide what's left of pride behind a painted face. Then lead the brass band down the street and shout it to the town. Where is the circus? Here comes the clown. You're like an organ grinder, I'm your monkey on a string. You toss me little bits of love, and I do everything. I'm walking on a tightrope, and I'm sure to tumble down. Where is the circus? Here comes the clown.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's Hank Thompson. He always makes me smile. Where is the circus? 1966 on Warner Brothers. And it was Frank in Northlake who requested that, and hopefully he's listening. Sometimes we get him in the last hour. All right, so continuing with Johnny D, there you are.
Wait a minute. That last bumper song, you weren't trying to insinuate anything there about me, were you?
Absolutely not. I mean, I was debating between that and Moon Over the Motel, so what can I tell you?
I was thinking, wait a minute, what's he planning to send in a clown for?
No, where is the circus? Here comes the clown. I thought Hank Thompson was one of the funniest damn people ever. Didn't get enough credit.
Who?
Hank Thompson. You know, he had about 80 chart records on the country charts. He's terrific.
Yeah? When was that? In the 50s?
Well, it started in the... Actually, he started in the 40s. Humpty Dumpty Heart was 48. But he charted through about 1983.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't in the country that much in the 80s. I was doing CSNN there.
Yeah, understood. Well, I was doing I was doing Smokey the Bar in 1968. Or I See Them Everywhere. That was one of my all-time favorite Hank Thompson's.
I see. Well, firstly, before I get to, but that's not what I called about.
Yeah.
I have to say that. I want to say, what's the little doggy that's being having an operation?
Maxwell.
Maxwell. Well, I got Caesar, my little dog Caesar. He's saying doggy prayers for
Thank you. That's appreciated.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if other people do it, Raleigh, but I know my sister does it with her dog, my younger sister. She got a little, what the heck, Jack Terrier or something?
Jack Russell. Jack Russell.
Jack Russell, yeah. And she, it's funny, man. I mean, she talks to this thing like it's talking to her. You know?
Well, it probably is.
I mean, me and Caesar talk, but I only talk to him.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, I'll say, Caesar, I say, go cheapy now, Daddy's going to go cheapy. You go cheap. That's how we talk,
yeah.
All right? I talk to him. But he don't talk back.
Right.
Unless if I say something and he's looking at me, and then I imagine what he's thinking.
Yeah.
You know, same. Okay. There's nothing wrong with me, is there?
Probably. I mean, let's face
it. I don't have to report to anybody.
Well, that's right. And you're calling a talk radio show, so of course there's something wrong with you, and I'm indebted.
Yeah, but, I heard you say, don't take none of this stuff personally.
God,
you know,
no. God, no.
I do, because, I don't like to be, I told you, I'm a sensitive fella.
No.
I don't like to be, have the toilet flushed on me.
Well, then, you got to stop doing things like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, or John, whatever his name is.
Oh, who the heck? But anyhow, listen. So, as far as that song goes, did I tell you my payback song? You know.
Yes, you're going to record. You're going to record one. I understand. We're going to be featuring it when you in fact record it.
Exactly, and I'm guessing another couple of days.
All right.
Actually, you said something about Mark. I said, yeah, he's going to be referenced in it.
Okay,
and,
very good.
Actually. My wife, Becky, what I got planned, she's going to have some choice words for Mark at the end.
Well, all right. Very good. We can't wait to hear it. Let us know.
Yeah, I know. I already talked to her about it, and she said, yeah, all right, just let me know. You know,
okay.
She'll do it. She all better right. do it, because if she knows what's good for
her. Well, yeah, that could be interesting, yes.
So, anyway, yeah, I got that planned, and then, and I'll give you a hint. A clue as to what it's based on. It's based on Don't Mess With Bill.
Very good. Don't tell us anymore. We want it to be a surprise.
I'll just tell you what it's going to be called.
Okay.
It's called Don't Mess With Bill, based on Don't Mess, but it's called Don't Mess With JD.
Okay. All right. Well, I can't wait to feature it. Keep us posted.
Yeah. I got a couple lines done. I got some other things all kicking right. around. In my head, you know.
Well, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, I get it. Now, that's not what I called about, though. But that's not what I called about. Now, at the beginning of your show, I got the phone right? Yeah, I got it right. Sometimes I have it upside down. Uh-huh. I think that night I sang them songs, my phone was upside down. That's why.
We can only hope. All right, so now what? What about the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah, the Super Bowl. No, when you said, yeah, these players, they only get like $135. What was it?
No. Here's the deal. We just mentioned that last year, each player on the successful team got $157,000. This year, they only get $136,000. So why has it gone down?
All right, well, I don't know. Maybe the NFL's not, and all them owners aren't making enough money. Because here's the deal. I was thinking when you said that, I'm going, oh, boy, they're really getting hammered. You know, the quarterback for the Cincinnati. Oh, yeah, and you should have been rooting for Cincinnati, Raleigh, because.
I didn't know there was a game. Yes, I didn't.
Through your old stomping ground.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Philadelphia, Cincinnati.
Yeah, I didn't even know there were games.
Well, you could have had 2 year old stomping.
Well, that would have been lovely, yes. Yes, that would have been delightful.
Yeah. And see, the quarterback, Joe Cool, for Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, like 23, 24 years old.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They're talking about a $500 million, $500 million contract.
Oh,
now these guys are getting hammered for it. They're only getting $157,000.
Well, no, I want to know why it went down. That's all I'm curious about.
I don't know, but
if the commercials went up,
$1 million this year. I don't know.
I understand we're not going to hold a charity, but if the commercials went up and everybody's making more money, who decided the players get less? I'm just curious.
I don't know. That's their agents and their lawyer. You know, bring lawyers, guns, and money to them negotiations.
Well, if you can figure it out, let me know because I'm still curious.
Well, I don't know. All I know is, man, I'd like to say 23, 24 years old, signing a contract for $500 million next year.
Sounds good to me.
Come on.
All right.
Yeah. I think the oldest one is Patrick Mahomes. And John told me an interesting thing that I don't know is exactly true. He mentioned to me when I called, he said, do you know that this is the first time in history that two black or two African-American quarterbacks will be starting in the Super Bowl? I said, well, I didn't hear that. I said, but I'm not sure about Patrick Mahomes. I don't know if he's African-American.
Oh,
now, Jalen Hurts, the guy from Philadelphia, yeah, I'll go with that. But Patrick Mahomes, I'm not sure about that.
I have no idea who these people
you
are.
You check it out and let me know, Raleigh.
Okay.
I'll talk to you
I'll
later.
Look for pictures. Thanks. I appreciate it. I have absolutely no idea who any of these people are. But, yeah, I'm just impressed by the dollars. And since they were going up, my only comment was, gee, why are the players getting less? I'm sure there's a reason there. All right. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. And, oh, man, let's see. Frank and Gurney has a request. What do you want to hear, Frank? All right, Frank left. He wouldn't wait around. Well, you know, that happens. It really does. All right, so Nick is in Baltimore. Hello, Nick.
Hey, good morning, Raleigh.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Great show again.
Did you hear your versatiles?
You know, I tuned in late.
I played your versatiles for you, yes, and talked about it was an interesting request because most people ask for Blue Feelin', which is on the flip side. But you asked for the ballad of the two, and I played it.
And I missed it.
So you see, now what you got to do, of course, is listen to the replay because it's
there. Yeah, because it's there. And I will.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for that.
Oh, sure.
Thanks for that. You know, your knowledge, you know, I've said this before, but it's amazing.
Useless information. Thank God for this radio show. Couldn't peddle it anywhere else. That's for damn sure.
Let me tell you, I was a jock, and when the station I was at in Annapolis, they went all oldies at one point,
uh-huh.
And they were playing 50s and 60s oldies. This is back in 85, I think, 85. and we played some of this stuff, and we were playing all records at that point because they didn't have time to cart the stuff up. And I tell you, I remember some of this stuff. So, although some of this stuff is before my time, I was born in 57. So, but I love it. I you know, what can I tell you?
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh yeah. Well, and WANN used to play these records.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, I went to dinner one night with Morris Blum, who owned WANN. It was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just loved it. Good soul. Yes.
It was great. I met his son. His son came over to WNAV.
That's
at
so
point.
Funny you say that. I met his son too, and this was hilarious. And I didn't know it, and neither did his son. But Morris Blum invited me to dinner so he could introduce me to his son because he didn't like his son's girlfriend. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. So needless to say, I hope he married the girl. I don't know. He seemed happy with her. So.
Well, you know, he was really a nice guy. We talked for like, yeah. I was after, it was after my shift.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, you know, we were talking about Whoa, we were talking about, you know, because they were 1190 and he used to sign off.
Yeah.
And we were talking about all this, and it was a great, great conversation about radio. Really good radio guy.
Yeah.
Really great people.
Yeah.
And that's a shame that all that stuff is gone now, and, you know, They moved all those stations out.
It's just
a mess. But I just wanted to thank you for that. And well, we were talking about the synchronous transmitters, so can you explain that to me? Because I don't know how they work.
Well, they don't. I can tell you how they're supposed. Yeah, they don't. It's a long, and I think there was one article that actually was like the torturous history of synchronous AM, and that's about it. Really, since the days of crystal transmitters, they were trying this, and the idea basically is a repeater. And that if you have, say, 1,000 watts on a frequency and you want to get further than the signal will allow, well, just put another transmitter on the same frequency down the road a bit. Well, and of course, it is supposedly viable, except, as I say, I don't think it ever has been. And like I said, we're going back to the 30s. And the problem is, of course, that when you have two stations on the same frequencies, you know, eliminating the heterodyne beats and everything else and then else is very difficult. So WBZ, when they were in Springfield, Mass, before they even went to Boston, they from the roof of the Westinghouse building there, that BZ could not cover Boston. So they put a repeater, WBZA, and they were both synchronized on the same frequency in 1926. They were using a tuning fork as a reference. And it did improve the coverage in some areas, but again, it created these interference zones that were just, you know, whacked. And the distortion and the fading and the nulls and all that. And so then they come up with the idea, we need a master crystal oscillator. And they said, well, we're going to, you know, divide the output and yada, yada, yada. And bottom line is it did not really work. But you had a lot of pressure. This is 1930. In fact, the Federal Radio Commission, this is before the days of the FCC, they did an overnight test. And in fact, they did it on 660. And it was WEAF, KDKA, and WGY at the time, all broadcasting the same program on the same channel. And again, at a distance, it worked remarkably well. The skywave reception was greatly improved. The fading was eliminated. But, you know, as you got into those phase zones, of course, you had problems. And, you know, this there were those who said at the time that this could have all been overcome, that they really were doing well with this, but there were economic issues. And so what was happening is they were feeding different network programs to different part of the country to serve advertisers who only wanted regional coverage.
Right.
So if you were going to synchronize, that's the end of split network operation. And so NBC feared that if they gave up their individual clear channel stations, that they wouldn't be able to, you know, to make regional bucks, and that there would be, you know, competitive networks and on and on and on. So anyway, you had NBC that tried this, particularly on shared time clear channel frequency, because remember, some of these you weren't licensed to do it all day, that kind of thing. And so in 31, I think it was 31, because it was still WEAF. So I think it was 31. They synchronized WEAF with WTIC in Hartford. Ah, now here's our problem. Okay, so the first thing I told you about the three NBC stations, you know, when we're talking New York and we're talking Pittsburgh, KDKA, and we're even talking Schenectady, well, they're far enough away. But here you've got New York City and Hartford, Connecticut, and they are too close together. And so the interference was obvious. And you also had Jay-Z in New York try it with BAL. And they did that, I think, even after the FCC was formed. I think they did that till about 37. And you had, if you remember, in Iowa, the big stations were owned by the chiropractic people. So WHO with hands only in Des Moines, synchronized with WOC World of Chiropractic in Davenport. And that was Palmer. You know, of course, Palmer Chiropractic School is Palmer owned both of them. And they were both on 1,000 kilohertz because, you know, this is way before the 1941 standardization. So they were using someone to monitor the stations halfway between the two stations, monitoring the beat note and remotely adjusting the crystal every 10 minutes. Well, that's it was reasonably successful, but by the time WHO got the 50,000 watts, that was it. BBM in Chicago tried it with KFAB, and they were time-sharing 770 since the 20s, I guess. And so in 34, about the time the FCC was created, they synchronized the carrier, and they would run the same stuff at night. And again, you're talking about a great distance, and you're really not having much of a problem. They did a lot of things to compensate, by the way, including, I think they were starting BBM's programming 20 milliseconds later to compensate for phone line delays between Chicago and Albuquerque and all that. So that was fine. And then, of course, in 44, KFAB changed frequencies when they were able to do the deal with WBT that you know about. So you had Lowell in 36, LLH, and they were operating a booster 9 miles away. Ah, now we're getting an interesting story. And it was 250 watts in Lowell and 100 watts in Lawrence, and they actually got permanent authority. They actually issued a license for the booster. Hang on a minute. John says I got to play commercials. Don't go away. Okay. We'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
I see them, I see them.
Don't tell me they're not there.
I see them, I see them.
I see them everywhere. Those little green men hang around my den, and I sometimes wonder why. With the shaggy hair, they sit and stare when my doggone bottle goes dry. Gonna have some fun, try to catch me one, so a sneaky doodled up behind. I said, alakadab, made a lightning grab, came up with a bottle of wine. I see them, I see them, don't tell me they're not there. I see them, I see them, I see them everywhere. Well, a 9-foot spider winked at me, then tippy-toed right on by. She didn't even pause, and the reason because she was chasing the 30-pound fly. Well, an elephant pink crawled out of my sink and snuggled up on my bed. And a striped ape in a long black cape keeps a-tapping on the top of my head. I see them, I see them, don't tell
WGN
me they're not
Radio.
There.
I'm Raleigh James. Figured a little more them. Hank Thompson was in order. Yes, I see them everywhere in 1969 on Dot. Yes. Well, AM synchronous transmitters work about as well as Hank Thompson's liquor-fueled visions. All right, so back to, I shouldn't really say that because Gates Air is making one of these transmitters right now, but nonetheless, you know, the bottom line is you're going to obviously try to do something to eliminate the interference, and there's a few possibilities. You can filter it out, which has not been terribly successful. You can do phase-locked loops, or you can do limiting amplifiers, but the only stations that legally operates with a permanent license is KOB. Everybody else, does not have a license to do that. And there were people who had temporary licenses, like San Juan, Puerto Rico. They had also Ponce, Puerto Rico, ISO and APA. Those licenses were yanked. There was a Madisonville, Texas on 1220 that had a relay in Huntsville and, 170 watts in the day. Now, the KOB thing, like I've told you, I've witnessed that. It does not sound good. And when it really doesn't sound good is when they forget to turn it off at night. Oh, my God. And,
wouldn't that be handled by computer, though?
Well, it should be. We have a station in Phoenix that is supposed to go down to, like, 10 watts at night. And, it's so erratic that we've all dubbed it the lamp timer because we're pretty convinced that it's using a lamp timer to, institute the pattern change. So, I don't know. But that's what it is. And that's pretty much the history of it. I didn't get into what happened later, and I guess I should. There were a number of things, during World War II, the FCC had a completely inconsistent attitude. In fact, WSAI had a 100-watt downtown booster from like 42 to 45 or something. And in the 50s, they seemed like they were going to eliminate everything because the FCC ruled in 54 that Class 4 stations were not eligible to use a booster to extend any coverage because it was against the purpose of the license because, a Class 4 station was licensed to be a local station. So WWDC had one. They did not get it renewed. Winks had a proposed application. They denied it. And then when the 7-7 rule came in 53, this almost wiped it out. Because, of course, you had things like CBS, which at that time had BT in Charlotte, and, their problems are notorious because of KFAB and all that. Well, they would have been over ownership limits if they continued to do that. And when Westinghouse wanted INS, they had to end their BZA Springfield, synchronous transmitter, because, of course, that would have been too many radio stations. So here comes the 80s, and Docket 87.6, they were allowing, and that's how KOB got that synchronous transmitter, by the way. And, they're the only ones who still have it. Now, the FCC opened a rulemaking, and this is only like 5-6 years ago, like 2017, under that AM Improvement Initiative. And I have not heard anything since then on somebody, really lobbying for that. So that's AM synchronization. What else do you want to know?
Well, that I think covers it, really.
Okay.
That's a whole history of it. I mean, that's what I mean. Your wealth of knowledge is, amazing. But, when these stations were sharing frequencies,
yes,
like BAL and Jay-Z, did they do dual IDs?
No, they didn't. They did the ID for the hours that they had. And actually, the last existing share, as you probably know, was in Fort Worth, and that was and Dallas, of course, WFAA and WBAP. And that was one of the most convoluted shares because they switched every 2 hours. And BAP, that's why they had their cowbell, would, WBAP now leaves 820, join us at 570. And WFAA now leaves 570, join us at 820. I mean,
and the network would stay with the frequency.
Yeah. Well, and so the bottom line to this was that it probably would still be going on if it weren't for Amon Carter Field and DFW. when DFW was being built, it just went right through the transmitter. And so, through the towers. That was pretty much it. But in the early days, and, we talked about a lot of this in early Chicago radio, in fact, the history of WGN's call letters and stuff like that, is it wasn't unusual for an entity to have like 5 hours a day or 4 hours a day, because you're talking a step up from a hobby at this point. You're talking about people who have water-cooled transmitters in a bathtub in a hotel.
Wow.
Yeah, the Hotel Alms in Cincinnati comes to mind. In any event, it's hard for us to believe that we're less than 100 years away from what was really an experiment.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
So, sure.
An amazing experiment.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I've always said that the coming of digital is the only invention other than the wheel that has changed mankind. But the coming of digital has started with the Industrial Revolution. So you're really talking the 1700s through now. And, you know, what we're seeing is just an outgrowth. So, of course, radio was going to come along in the mix, obviously. And I don't think... any of us alive now are going to see how it really changes society. But it, like I say, just like the wheel, I don't think there's anything that is more of a change to how people live on this planet.
But, you know, I still love AM radio.
Well, of course. Oh, on an and, you know, I've mentioned this before. I get in a car. I don't care who's going. I'm listening to the AM radio. You know, it's just the way it is. And the problem I have at night now, forget about the interference and how sometimes how hard it is to DX, is just that I'm not rewarded with programming. You know, but man, I'll tell you, you know, the late 1950s, early 1960s, lying in bed at night, dialing around. Oh, man, why sleep when you can listen to all this?
Oh, yeah. I used to plan my weekends around.
Absolutely.
When I was a kid.
Sure.
I used to have GN, though.
Oh, yes, and it is it's probably the fine example because, you know, you don't hear brokered programming and things like that, mm-hmm. and you know, it's all geared directly towards Chicago as well as it should be. Yeah, GN's a wonderful example, and GN is rewarded for it. They're, at this point in time, making quite a bit of money, which is nice. But the
That's
nice thing,
yeah.
Yes, it is wonderful. But, you know, even if they weren't, when you've got ownership behind you with Nexstar, that, you know, that it doesn't have to, is what I'm saying. It's wonderful that it does make money, but considering how well Nexstar as a corporation does, it wouldn't have to. And they treat it well. The new transmitter facilities, oh, my God, they're investing millions and millions in this.
Well, it's wonderful that they're committed to it.
Yeah, I've even said to John, you know, I don't know when I'll be well enough to make a field trip, but if I do, I want it to be so I can see GN's new facilities. I want to see that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see that online.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, I hope you feel better, and I thank you for your time.
Anytime. Always good to hear from you.
Oh, hey, thanks.
Okay, thanks. All right, so 888-876-5593. We got Ruth and Gurney and Rick in California and Sherry in Naperville coming up on WGN Radio.
You know love makes the world go round. And love, baby, makes the seesaws go up and down. And it makes trees grow tall. And the most important thing of all, it makes a boy and girl, oh, say they feel so fine now. Without love, flowers wouldn't grow in spring. And without spring, yeah, the British just couldn't see. Yeah, yeah, everybody needs love. And to watch the twinkling stars above, it makes a boy and girl, yeah, say they feel so fine now.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Dion Jackson on Carla, 1965. Love makes the world go round. He would have turned 77 last week. Born and raised in Ann Arbor. Died in Arlington Heights in 2014. Sadly had a brain hemorrhage, just 68 years old. But what a terrific record that was. So 888. Oh, it was a hit too, by the way, a big one. And I don't say that about so many records usually, like the ones that don't make it. But that was number 3 on the R&B charts and number 11 on the the pop charts. And that was a real good deal for Ollie McLaughlin, who owned the Carla label. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-ROLLIE. And that is going to take us to Ruth and Gurney. Are you still there, Ruth?
Right. I am.
All right. All right, what's up?
Hi, Fat Joy.
Yeah.
Chinese New Year's. I had a nice supply from last year's Year of the Tiger to pass out to schools, fortune cookies. I wanted to send you that. Mm. I don't call often because I try to avoid the negativity from the news in between while I would be waiting, you know, for the call to go through. But I had a Healy rheumatoid arthritis in my hands. I told you that I was working on something that I felt was going to be an avenue of approach aside from what physicians do or don't do. But the real reason why I seized the moment and started just after 10:30 and waited was because I could hold the phone in my hand without any pain for the first time.
All right.
Since I had this healing from St. Raphael the Archangel, who is a powerhouse for blind people. And wait till you hear the masses that I've had said and for who. And I'm anxiously waiting for statistics for St. John in Tulsa, the hospital, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
I'm anxiously waiting to see what powerhouse St. Raphael is going to do for that location. Uh-huh. But the statement about, and I'm glad the day is over, the backwards day is over. Mm. And, of course, we didn't have anything to worry about much because it's all frozen out there.
Uh-huh.
It's like freezing witchcraft spells. Uh-huh. It's frozen. So I had a answer for someone who asked me to do something in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with one of the best quick comebacks. And I did not do it at the moment, but I'm seizing it now. I'm seizing the moment. So it was a quack psychiatrist while I had COVID at Lake Forest Hospital, mild COVID, and he wanted me to do the last five presidents in reverse. And I said, I don't do anything in reverse except wash clothing.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided what I should have told him, because this is where the avenue of approach outsmarts arrogant people. I should have started with the president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and his first lady, Eleanor, and continued on down to all of the presidents and the first ladies and their names, all the way up to, well, it was not under this current administration, so I couldn't have said who was going to be elected now in the presidency, but I would have went up right back to the last president if I'd gone from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and I would have put that quack psychiatrist at Lake Forest Hospital in his place.
All right.
But they wound up sending me to the Alzheimer's ward at a Hotel California nursing home in Highland Park. And I'll tell you what,
you got out.
A witch's hat in a Alzheimer's ward can put your enemies out of commission.
I'll bet.
So I have a wonderful story to tell you about Mother Nature. So at another time, I got to wait for some time to pass by.
Okay. Yeah.
So I am not on the air over a long, lengthy amount of time because of the negativity that's out there bandied about and metastasized over reports from people doing things that have been gone off the wall.
All right.
So anyway, I had that backwards story.
Okay.
And how I refused to do anything backward.
Yes.
And then I had the healing of rheumatoid arthritis in my hands. And real quick, of the many masses that I had said at St. Raphael, and each one has such a fascinating avenue of approach for solutions. The latest one was prayer shawl ministry. Mm. These ladies crochet prayer shawls and pray while they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'm going up another notch. I'm putting not only donations for yards and then passing out prayer shawls, I am going to have the prayer ministry with a mass set for them so that I can metastasize that powerhouse. So for a veterinarian or a dog, a prayer show, highly best, will save you some money.
Well, hallelujah. That's terrific.
The healings are like just
keep on flourishing.
Yeah. It's just incredible. And for the blind people, St. Raphael is in the Old Testament. That's one of his biggest powerhouses.
Okay.
So, have a fortune cookie day.
You too. Thanks for calling, Ruth.
I will. Thank you.
All right. All right. So, you know, there are times that I have no idea what we're talking about, and that's perfectly fine. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh, and Sherry is in Naperville. So, all right, Sherry. You there, Sherry?
Oh.
Yes.
I, through that long conversation, I completely forgot what I was going to ask you.
Oh, God. Well, it says Super Bowl costs on the screen.
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. So, you mentioned that you were stymied by the fact that the Super Bowl ads cost so much more, but the players were getting so much per game.
Yeah, less. They're getting less than they got. So, in other words, there's a big increase in the advertising, but a decrease in what the players get. What's going on?
Okay. So, what I'm guessing, I'm guessing, but that, for example, what the players get, you know, there's all these stadiums and how much ever it costs and how much ever their taxes went up. Like, I guess Chicago's taxes went up exorbitantly.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, for homeowners, that, you know, it's like expected revenues less costs equals profits per player. But and the Super Bowl ads, that's a network set cost to advertise. So they're like two different...
well, yeah, yes and like no. I understand what you're saying, and I didn't go through all the rest of the financial figures, but it seems like for whatever reason, this time the players are getting a lower percentage. Now, by the way, when I say the winning players each get $150,000 last year, the losing players each got $75,000, so they didn't walk away with nothing. But this year, it's considerably less, and I'm just curious how they justified it.
I have no idea because
right, exactly. I don't either.
I like football because I marched in marching bands like since junior high and high school and blah blah blah, and we always had to play him, so I get that, and that tickles David to death because I always want to hear the game. But
I'm sure it has to do with postseason shares, so you would be right from the standpoint of that's a factor, but I just wonder what drove it this year.
I think it's inflation.
No, you'd expect they'd get more then. Because inflation...
No.
Well, I understand inflation increases expenses.
Because of cost.
Yes,
absolutely. The inflation on the cost.
Right, but there's also inflation on the take, on the, you know, like what the average ticket price is and all of that things. I don't know.
Well, that's true, too. But and I don't know, because they're not playing in... You know, they're playing in stadiums that have nothing to do with
the stadium that
they're from.
Yes, they're not getting it from their team. They get it from the NFL. The bonus money comes from the NFL, not from the team.
Yeah, I know.
So, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, none of us do. Maybe someone insider, maybe someone in WGN Radio Sports will have a clue. Maybe we'll find out.
Okay. I was on the phone when you were talking, and you said, and Rick's on the phone, and this was early.
Yes, and poor Rick, he's been waiting for a while, and I'm going to beg his forgiveness and ask him to call tomorrow night, because we have a full show tomorrow night.
That's the trucker Rick, is it?
No, it's not Recliner Rich.
Oh, okay.
This is Rick in Northern California. All right.
And I'm concerned about Leia.
Yes. Well, we will keep you posted on that.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks.
And I got news for Jimmy.
Ooh, how is he doing?
Well, he's doing okay. He's still putting weight on his foot with the walker.
Good.
But he gets confused because he ended up blind in one eye like a year or two ago. because, I don't know. Anyway, so he was confused when he was going out the door and of his unit or hospital room, and he fell because he moved the walker one way and his foot moved the other way, and he fell against the door jam. And he has like a, he said a foot bruise down the left side of his shoulder, and they had to lift him up with some hoist thing.
Oh my God.
And, but he did say at this rehab center that he had a roommate that was the first intelligent roommate he's had all this time.
All right. Well, you've ended the show. You'll have to tell me more about it later.
Sure. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. And again, Rick, I'm so sorry. Call tomorrow night. I will be here. 3 big hours, 21 hours from right now. We thank Dan for keeping us on the air, John for screening your calls, you especially for calling. I'm Raleigh James. That's a wrap. It's WGN Radio.